Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Truth Podcast. I am your Jose, the fantasy football fiend, and I have my guy, BK Wins. How about the people, my guy?
Hey, y'all.
Yo, so it's a lot going on in sports. Obviously, March Madness is going on. We're preparing for the draft that's coming up. We have the NBA playoffs that are going to be starting here soon. MLB is alive and kicking. NHL is around. Like, this is just one of those times of year where whatever you like other than the NFL, it's pretty much at your disposal. So we got a lot to talk about, and we will hop right into it after I give you a gentle reminder that you can catch us on YouTube at The Gospel STP. Again, that's The Gospel STP. Let's go right ahead and hop into it. What's the good word of the week, BK?
Well, we're going to start in the NFL real quick. Is breaking news today, Geno Smith signed a 2-year, $75 million deal with the Raiders. What's your reaction to Tom Brady landing his quarterback there in Vegas?
I see it as a good move. Geno Smith has shown himself to be an above-average quarterback. And as long as you now get him the weapons that are necessary, you'll be fine. They were in a situation where they didn't want to wait on a rookie, while at the same time, veteran quarterbacks that are available don't grow on trees. Based on who's available, what they wanted to spend, and what you can expect, consistency speaking, some guys that were out there, Sam Darnold guy, type guy, you don't know if he's Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde, or if last season was the exception and not the rule. Geno Smith has shown over several seasons that he is consistent and he can lead a team where they need to go if the other pieces of the team are in place. In Seattle, the offense was fine. They couldn't defend anymore. The Raiders, they've had a pretty good defense the last couple of years. They couldn't put up enough points. So they now have a guy that can put up points, and they didn't give up anything on defense. So as long as the coaching is up to snuff, you would think that this team would be quite a bit better going into the next year than they were previous years.
Yeah, I think it's really a win-win for both sides, right? It's a win for Geno because he still has a starting job and got paid. It's a win for...
Got overpaid, too.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know how that goes. Anytime you're trying to land a free agent player and you're a bad team, you have to overpay to get your guy. So the Raiders overpaid to get Geno, but the Raiders needed a quarterback. It was probably the best option available on the market in terms of health and talent that's available. And so, like you said, they don't want to wait around 2 years for a rookie to come through. So, and the good news for the Raiders too is they found a starting quarterback, but they did invest a lot of years in him. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's a 5-year deal or something that it's hard to get out of. Said differently, they didn't pull a Browns.
Right.
So, because for example, if they gave him 5 years and $200 million, then I'd have a whole different assessment of this. But I think this is a win for both sides and good for them.
They didn't even pull in Atlanta because they're not even paying him Kirk Cousins money. So, and he's better than him. So there's that piece.
Correct. Well, continuing on March Madness, the men's Final Four, the national semifinal Saturday night, we have an all-SEC showdown where Florida takes on Auburn and then Duke takes on Houston in the national semifinals. Zay, give me your preview of these two matchups and who you got.
Best team I've seen so far, Auburn. Best player I've seen so far, Flag. Both teams, I think, move on to the next round. Auburn has really good post defense and offense, and they make it very difficult for you to be comfortable scoring on any level of the floor. And defense travels, and coaching travels, and Bruce Pearl has shown at all of his stops that he can create a winner. It's no different here in Auburn. Duke will go as far as Flag can take them. I don't know that Houston has an answer. So in that matchup, I'm leaning towards Duke, and I'm leaning towards a Duke versus Auburn championship.
So I will have official predictions later in the program. But what I will say is, from a preview standpoint, Duke in Houston to me is the more interesting semifinal because it's a contrast of style. Houston typically doesn't give up more than 50-some points a game. Duke is routinely putting up over 85 points. There's, you know, if it's not Flag, it's Proctor. They got other weapons. They got a lot of people that can score on Duke. Both teams are very well coached in Shire and, of course, Calvin Sampson. They're both terrific head coaches. In the Florida-Auburn matchup earlier in the season, Florida raced to a 21-point lead and held on to win by 9. Again, that was a while back, so I can't say what happened then will happen now. These teams are at a different place. Quite frankly, they're both playing a lot better than they were playing then. And so it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top. And of course, as I mentioned before, don't worry, good people. I'm not taking a cop out. I'm just saving the picks for the best bets.
I'm happy about the fact that the games have been very much entertaining. I'm sort of sad about the fact that we don't have any mid-major Cinderella type situations going like this. The carriage has turned into pumpkins real quick this year. I don't know that I've seen that happen where it went chalk all the way through. Like, we have 4 number ones, so that's, you know. And matters of fact, don't we have, I'm pretty sure we have 4 number ones on the ladies' side too, if I'm not mistaken.
There's one exception.
Who was the one that?
UConn. UConn was a 2.
That makes sense. Because in my mind, UConn should have been a number one. So, yeah.
Agreed. Right.
But yeah. And let's segue on over to the women's Final Four. You have South Carolina going up against Texas, and you have UConn going up against UCLA. Picks, previews, what you got for me, buddy?
So in the South Carolina-Texas game, we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But I will tell you that in the UConn-UCLA match, the Huskies have covered, I think, somewhere between 8 and 10 in a row. While Lauren Betts is a star, superstar for UCLA, one of the 3 best players in women's basketball, you know, Gigi Watkins, Paige Beckers, and Lauren Betts, I think, are the 3 best in some particular order. I think, to me, Watkins is the best player, Beckers being 2nd and Betts 3rd, but they're finalists for the player of the year. The difference, though, is UConn has so many weapons to score the ball. You know, it starts with Becker. She can score, and I don't say this often in the women's game, but she scored 31 one night and 40 the next, and it looked like easy 40. Like, she wasn't jacking up 50 shots to do it. It just, like, was in the flow of the offense, not forcing shots. She just kind of took the shots that she had and just scored so easily from all over the floor. They also have AZ Fudd, who struggled mightily in the last match in the semis against Southern Cal. But they're, and then, of course, Sarah Strong was definitely lived up to her name. She was very strong in that match with another double-double. I just think UConn has the better depth. They have the coaching advantage with the GOAT, Gina Auriemma. They have the experience. UCLA, they're the one team that's not used to being here. They haven't been here in forever. So they don't have the experience. They don't have as talented of a team. Don't get me wrong. They're very good. But I like UConn to get it done. They'll go to the championship game to try to get Beckers her elusive title before she heads to the pros. In the South Carolina-Texas, what's weird is this is the 4th time we've seen this game, right? So in the bookends of this, South Carolina drilled them. They drilled them in Columbia. They drilled them in the SEC tournament game. They lost a tough one at Texas and Austin that broke their SEC winning streak. I think was like 55 games when they lost. And it was only because they didn't make a field goal the last 4 minutes and lost by four. Texas plays elite defense. In fact, I don't know that there's a better defensive team in women's college basketball, but they have one big problem. They can't score. And it's going to be, and South Carolina is terrific at playing defense. And I just think they're going to have a hard time scoring against the Lady Gamecocks in that matchup. But what do you think about these matches?
So I'll start with the South Carolina versus Texas matchup. South Carolina is the most athletic team. They're also the deepest team. But the issue is they've had issues guarding the post. Chloe Kidd is a phenomenal scorer. She's a willing defender, but not a great defender. Fagan is also, she's a putback kind of a scorer. That they're not really going to drop too many plays for her, but if either one of them get into foul trouble, the issue is the one place Texas scores the most is in the paint, and the one place South Carolina has the most problems defending, considering they can chase you around the entire court, is the post. If Kitts or Fagan, either one, get into foul trouble, that also was one of the main issues that went down when they lost in Texas. So they have a center there that is able to, with consistency, score the ball. But I still see South Carolina coming out on top. Now, here's the thing. For selfish reasons, I'm glad the brackets worked out the way they did. Because I agree with you. UConn is more likely to be able to beat UCLA. But when you have the best post player in the game on UCLA, being Betts, and the deficiency in the post for South Carolina, I didn't necessarily want to see that matchup. That would be the most difficult matchup from a fan perspective. So if South Carolina goes up against UCLA, I think they have a much tougher time winning the championship than if they went up against UConn. UConn can score the basket for sure. UConn came to South Carolina and ran the Lady Gamecocks out of the gym. They didn't forget that. And this is one of those, it's real difficult to beat a great coach twice in the same season. I kind of feel that would be the talking point of the SC versus UConn sort of a setup. So I'm looking forward to it, however it works out, as long as South Carolina's in the championship.
Let me ask you this, Zay, as our resident Gamecocks expert here. So if I have, as great as they've been this year, 34-3, right? 15-1 regular season, winners of the SEC tournament. Clearly, they've had a tremendous amount of success.
Absolutely.
My question to you is, all three of these teams have beaten South Carolina this year. They're responsible for their losses. The other thing that I'm concerned at is, in the last 2 years when Carolina went through the tournament, they steamrolled a lot of teams and were dominant. In this year's edition, outside of the opener where it was a laugher, they've really struggled throughout the entire tournament to put teams away. Like Indiana in the second round, you know, Duke in the last round. Pretty much every game they played other than the first game, it's been a battle. Now, to their credit, it's survive and advance. And at the end of the day, you never have to apologize for a W. I guess to you, how concerning is this is that they seem to have lost that aura of invincibility? Teams aren't afraid to play them like they were the last 2 years, where Carolina, I feel like, had such a talent advantage in that aura that teams knew they were beaten before they stepped on the court. I think teams are more confident they can play with them. Would you agree with that, or do you think that's not fair?
I think that's 100% fair. And what you no longer feel, is getting the ball to the hoop. There's no Aaliyah Boston. There's no Asia Wilson. That like that, we can still chase you off of the 3-point line. No problem. We still have decent defenders in the post, but you have no great defender. That's what you used to have. And in the women's game, the closer you are to the basket, the more likely you are to hit the shot. And if when you're going against that team, the closer you are to the basket, the less likely you are to hit the shot because of who's going to be defending there. And you remove that entity from the picture. However, this is the other piece. I think this is a treat for the team and the fans, because I know as a fan, it's nice to have that warm fuzzy from the second half of the first quarter through the end of the game. This is never in doubt. This was never a question of whether we were going to win. There's a place for that. But the amount of excitement that this team has brought to the table because they didn't put teams away in the first quarter, like, it's actually better for the game the way they're winning now. So just win, baby. That's all I can say. Just keep winning. All you need is 1 point, and I'm good with that. You can go to double overtime and win by 1 point. I'm good with that. Figure out a way to win.
Well, last but not least, in the good word, we're going to wrap up with more March Madness. How's your bracket looking in both the men's and the women's tourney?
Well, men's bracket not looking quite as nice as the women's bracket, but I believe I was in about like the, I'm in the 78th percentile for the men's bracket, which ranks me 5.5 million with 930 points using ESPN's bracket system. I do have all four of the final four still there with Duke winning the championship. So I do have a chance to make a little bit of ground there. With the women's bracket, 89th percentile. I was at 99th for a minute there, but my bracket, along with many other people's, was kind of upset a little bit when Juju went down, because wasn't no way USC was about to beat UConn without Juju. So that's just, you know. But there, I still have South Carolina. Who did I have? 1 second here. I had South Carolina winning, and I have them going up against UCLA. So we'll see how that pans out. I just really feel like to go ahead and move on over to, I wanted to just explain something real quick as far as that UConn-UCLA matchup. Although UConn can score from everywhere, I don't know that they can get the ball to the hoop with regularity with Betts in the middle there. Like, a good bit of the way they're scoring is in the post. It's getting those easy layups off of those beautiful plays that they run. I don't know that you're going to get as many of those as you used to with that young lady guarding the paint. So I still like my picks, although UConn has been playing excellent ball. And I, again, for selfish reasons, I kind of hope my pick is incorrect, because I don't want South Carolina to have to go up against UCLA in the finals.
Yeah, so for the bracket, you and I had the same four for the men's: Florida, Auburn, Houston, and Duke. We talked before the tournament, and you asked me, and I know my dad asked me, and some other really good friends asked me, you know, BK, who are the three best teams? And I told you all before the tournament, the three best teams in no particular order were Duke, Florida, and Houston. I've seen nothing to change my mind, not to discredit Auburn, who's been terrific as well. But the three teams I told you are in the final four. And so the And the fourth team that I said to be on the radar for, Bama, lost, you know, in the Elite Eight to Duke, right? So, you know, and there's no shame to losing to this Duke team. They're really great. No,
not at all.
So, and the thing, just a quick thing on Duke, because, you know, this is one of the rare times I'm going to say something positive about that color blue. But I hope people out there don't just get caught up with the greatness of Cooper Flagg, and they recognize just how good the support pieces are to Duke, the Proctors, I'm going to probably mess up his last name, but the Keneally, like, they have players that can play really well and score. It's not just Cooper Flagg. Don't get me wrong. He's the leader in the clubhouse and the superstar, but it's not just him.
It's like the UConn girls team. It's not just Paige.
Right.
But if Paige don't have a good game, good luck winning.
Correct.
Like, so it's a similar setup, if you will.
You know, that's spot on. That's very true. But obviously with my best bets, they will line up with my predictions for the semifinals. So I will leave that be for the moment. On the women's side, I'll tell you, I hit 7 of the Elite Eight. The one miss was I had Notre Dame beating TCU. I didn't bet on the game, but they were a 7.5-point favorite and lost to TCU despite being the 3-2. I just thought that TCU wouldn't be able to deal with the backcourt of Notre Dame. But give TCU credit, the Horned Frogs, they played terrific. You know, Carolina, UConn, UCLA, and Texas were my final four teams. I had UConn beating Southern Cal, not knowing that Watkins would get hurt, but UConn beat them badly, I think, last year in the tournament. And I just think this team is really, really motivated and a dangerous team, the Huskies. Like, I wouldn't want to play them. I'll just say that. They're the one team in this tournament that I wouldn't want to play. I'm not saying they're a lock. I'm not saying that South Carolina or Texas or UCLA aren't great. All of these teams are great and deserving. I just think the Huskies are the most dangerous team because they have multiple players who can go nuts and go for 30. And that other teams can do that. I do have UConn going to the national title game. I have them beating UCLA. The other game you'll hear about a little bit later.
Love it, love it, love it. And that pretty much wraps up the good word for the week. And we can now move on to our truth and nothing but the truth. What's up first, BK?
Well, Zay, a little break from the madness, a little NFL, or maybe more madness. Of course, in this case, it's the NFL gridiron and some off-season rule changes. So, two of note. One, in overtime, both teams will now get the ball in the regular season, no matter what. And the second rule change is the replay assistant role has now expanded to include hits on defenseless players, grabbing the face mask, forced collar tackles, tripping, and running to and roughing the kicker. These can all be reviewed. One quick note on the overtime, the rules, they debated going from 10 minutes to 15 minutes in overtime, like it used to be. It's still a 10-minute quarter. Remember, the postseason rules are unchanged. And the other thing, in the regular season, there can still be ties versus in the postseason, you know, the game cannot end in a tie. So what are your thoughts about these rule changes?
They almost got it right. I don't see a reason for there to be a difference in regular season and postseason rules. Like, the game is the game. Let the rules be the rules. Like, the time of year or what's at stake or whatever the case may be shouldn't determine the rules. I shouldn't play 18 weeks of football, 17 games, and then say, oh, wait, by the way, the rules change next week. Like, it doesn't make sense. Everything else, awesome. Like, use replay to check everything. What's the point of it if you're not going to use it? Like, if you think you may be wrong, correct it. Just don't hold up the game on every play because you're trying to verify something. But I mean, if it's just if the ref called it type of situation, that's a little bit different.
No, I agree. I think the big thing that bothers me about the overtime rule is, to quote Herm Edwards, you play to win the game, right? Why are we playing an entire football game and a 10-minute overtime to not have a winner? And I understand player safety, but to be honest, if you're that worried about player safety, you wouldn't have the overtime at all and just call it a tie after regulation. So the fact that we're having an overtime tells me that we, quite frankly, should have a winner. It's the one thing. I like expanding the replay to include other things. My only concern, of course, is my usual sarcastic jadedness to this, which is, are we going to actually review it and get it right? Or are we going to just review it and still screw up the call? Because that's what seems to happen half the time. So if we can get the call right, great. If not, then this is just much ado about nothing.
I completely agree. Yeah, not much of a change at all.
I was curious your thoughts going back to the NBA. I know we've talked in different shows about the declining ratings in the association. Are there any NBA rule changes that you think are needed to increase ratings? And if so, what are they?
Honestly, as far as ratings are concerned, I don't believe that rules are the NBA's issue. I really can't think of a particular rule that, hey, if you change that, people would watch you. Like, no, it's... Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. I think what it is more than anything, your average fan has come to the point where in their mind's eye, LeBron has done all he's going to do or all they're going to give him credit for, and they still don't know who his replacement is. LeBron is doing the NBA a favor right now by continuing to play, because although we have stars, we don't have that guy. Who's the next guy? We got a bunch of guys, but when Jordan was done, we knew Kobe was the next guy. Before Kobe was done, we knew LeBron was the next guy. Who's the next guy? That you have to have a guy in the NBA. We don't right now. We have several guys that we want to anoint as being the guy because we know we need a guy, but most of them ain't that guy.
Yeah, I can definitely see that for sure. And I agree. So here's the thing. I would change some rules. Too specifically, I would move back the 3-point line. I would like, basketball is supposed to be both an offensive and defensive game. I'm tired of watching all five positions on the floor jack up threes. You know, not to be the old get off my lawn person, but, you know, 7-footers should be posting up and playing inside. There's a value to that. Getting easy buckets, dunks, and fouls and layups. Like, that's a part of the game. And to watch everybody on the floor jack up a combined 53-pointers a game, to me, this is the NBA, the highest level of basketball. It's not a 3-point shootout, nor is this horse. Like, let's get back to the fundamentals and actually play real basketball and not just jack up threes. It's just not real basketball. And then the second part of it, like, games shouldn't be 140 to 134 as a final. Like, I'm not asking you to go back to 82 to 80 where, like, you know, but I also think they need to increase the physicality. We need to reduce the flagrant fouls. People need to be able to make contact. I would bring back hand checking. Like, I want there to not have the freedom of movement. I want you to have to work harder to score. I'd much rather watch the game be 104 to 100 or 102 to 98 than watch 140 to 134, or in some cases where the game's 83 to 80 at the half. Like that's not professional basketball. That's not any basketball. That's an all-star game. And the other thing that hurts the NBA, Zay, and this is any league that's not football, the season's too damn long. Hockey's too long at 82 games. NBA's too long at 82 games. Clearly the players agree, which is why they load management and miss 12 games. You know, so clearly they agree. Baseball's too long at 162. You and I have beaten that drum as much as we can. So this, other than in college football and pro football, the seasons are too long. So no one has the attention span to watch 82 games when half the teams make the playoffs. What are we doing?
Couldn't agree with you more, my guy.
I'm a little concerned that you're agreeing with me. And I didn't even pay
you. I mean, when you're right, you're right. I mean, but I do still feel like the not knowing who to root for if I don't watch you on a regular base, that's hurting the game.
Well, you're right, because, you know, the successful leagues market their stars, and we don't really know who. Like, I feel like the best player in basketball post-LeBron at this point would be Jokic, but he's such an unassuming guy. True. That, like, and he plays in Denver. So if he played in L.A. or New York.
It would have been like the league attempting to promote David Robinson back in the day.
Yeah. And it's like if Jokic, imagine if Jokic played for the Lakers, besides you'd be drooling over all your title chances. But beyond that,
I don't think it would help the NBA.
But it would help. I do think that he would get so much more attention, because if he got 61-10-10 like the other night and he played for the Lakers or the Celtics or the Knicks, that thing would be on TV for a week.
But the issue is, I don't know that it's so much the team he plays for as it is the way he carries himself. He's very unassuming. He's very humble. He's not a big eye guy. And to a certain extent, self-promotion is necessary as well. And he's not going to do that. Now, I'll put this out there now. Just putting it out there. You know, Jokic and Luka Doncic are best friends. They love to be able to play together at some point in time. And if Jokic isn't happy in Denver in the next 2 years or so, the contracts may just work out to where Jokic may be available around the same time that the Lakers will no longer be playing LeBron. So just throwing that out there as a future possibility that the NBA may need to consider constructing to save itself, if you will. So.
I hadn't thought about that, but yes, that is definitely in play. Well, one last thing for basketball, going back to the women's game real quick. I was curious. And this includes even the injury, but or before, it doesn't matter because it doesn't change their abilities. Who do you think the best player in the women's game is? You have Juju, Paige Beckers, or Lauren Betts? Because those are by far the three best players.
For me, it's Juju, and it's not close. Beckers is a beast. Don't hear what I'm not saying. She's a baller. Juju has that extra something that not only is she a baller, not only is she ahead of Caitlin Clark's record as far as most points put up now going into year three, but ending year two, but she just makes it look so smooth. Like, she just has an element to her game where she makes you mad because she makes it look so easy. Like, I'm trying to think of a comparison, but in the women's game, I don't know that there's another player quite like her. The closest back in the day, maybe Maya Moore, but their games are so different. She just has a sweet game. Like, it's, you look at her play and you're like, wow, like, you could play with anybody on any court, anywhere, on any league. Like, I really feel like Juju may be one of the first female players that I would legitimately entertain making the argument of her being a pro, even if it were in the NBA and not the WNBA. I don't give that to anyone else.
Do you know who former college and pro great on the women's side that Juju reminds me of?
Who's that?
Candace Parker. In terms of her ability and her game, like her or Shamika Holzclaw, one of those two, very similar in terms of their impact that they had.
I agree on impact. And I actually had Candace in my mind's eye, but I went the more direction because of the difference in the position with Candace being the center. So the way they go about scoring is different. Juju can score from anywhere and is likely to score from anywhere, to whereas Candace did the majority of her damage in the post.
Fair enough. I do agree with you. I have Juju first by a wide margin. I have Paige Becker second. And I honestly have Betts third and a distant third. And it's not because I am diminishing or hating on Lauren Betts and her ability. She's a bona fide superstar. And I did say she's the third best player in women's basketball on the collegiate side. So it's not like I'm saying she's terrible. If third best is still really great. But Beckers, I think, is a better leader and can affect the game in many different ways. She can get buckets in transition. She can knock down threes. She has a mid-range game. Betts is very limited in what she can do. What she does great, exceptionally. But she's not Juju and Beckers in terms of the dynamic way they affect the game.
I'll say this. On the next level, I think Betts can possibly be more effective, I'll say. Not better than, but more effective than Paige. Just because you can't teach size and her skill set, you don't see a lot of teams with that person on their team. So Angel Reese, we saw the effect that she was able to have with the Chicago Sky, and she's nowhere close to being able to score the basket like Betts does, but Betts can rebound like she does, and she can block like she does.
No, Betts is going to be a beast in the next level. She's going to be a load to deal with. You're right. I agree with everything you said. She's going to be a double-double machine.
Yep.
Yeah, good luck dealing with her on the next level.
It'll only be a couple of teams that have a player capable of even trying to. You're going to have to double her.
Right. I mean, that's...
Unless you're the Aces and you have Asia Wilson. And you're the Fever, Aaliyah Boston can guard her one-on-one. Outside of that, good luck.
Yeah, agreed. No, agreed. Well, rounding out our truth and nothing but the truth, a little MLB action here. I'm sure all of you guys have heard by now the new phenomenon that's taken the league by storm, these torpedo bats that as of Wednesday morning this week, only 13 players were using, quite a few Yankees, which of course drew some public scrutiny. For those of you who don't know what these torpedo bats are, it's a redistribution of the wood more towards an area of the bat that's going to most likely make contact, which has enhanced, for those who are against them, enhanced people's ability to make to perform, basically to hit more home runs and have better stats. What's your take on this, Zay?
No one told you not to go buy a bat. Why haven't you bought one yet today? Like, if the issue is, and honestly, it's only an issue because it's Yankees, but, or if it was the Dodgers or somebody like that, I mean, it's certain teams that, or if it was the Astros, it'd be a huge deal. It's certain teams that based on either winning or cheating, it's a huge deal no matter what they do. But at the end of the day, this isn't something that the Yankees, first of all, came up with. It was actually, I want to say it was a guy associated with, was it the Marlins, if I'm not mistaken, who came up with this concept. So join the party or shut up. Like, I'm tired of these get off my lawn people in baseball. If this does actually make home runs more possible and you don't get suspended for it, hey, give people a bat and maybe they'll take the needle out of their behind. Because one of the biggest eras in baseball was the steroid era when everybody was knocking balls out of the park. You want to fix your viewership problem? Keep making these bats and keep hoping that it's actually the bat and not just a team that happens to be hitting well or will regress back to the mean anyway, and the bat will just be another bat that you'll choose or choose not to use, which is kind of where I am. It all randomly, pitchers will adjust, so you can't necessarily as easily hit the ball with that part of the bat, or there'll be adjustments. So, I mean, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but anything that can make you score more points in baseball that is readily available to everyone should not be poo-pooed or ridiculed by anyone.
Yeah, so here's my view on this. One, no team or player would be using these if MLB didn't approve them. So these bats have been approved by Major League Baseball. So let's first state that. Secondly, I think people are caught up in the moment and they get lost at the big picture. So I always like to say stats are like bikinis. They show a lot, but not everything. Well, I'm gonna use that analogy to this situation. In game two, where the Yankees beat the Brewers 20-9 and hit a franchise record 9 home runs in that game, what people don't talk about is that former Yankee Nestor Cortes was on the hill pitching batting practice with 4 miles an hour slower off of his pitches than normal, which is not uncommon early in the season because it's still extended spring training that now counts as games, kind of like the NFL with spring training in the regular season, right? The preseason games counting, it's no different in that aspect. Cortes didn't, you know, have his stuff. He got lit up. The Yankees were familiar with him. But in either case, you know, Austin Wells has power. Bellinger has power. Aaron Judge, you might have heard of him. He has some pop in his bat. By the way, he wasn't using that bat and homered 3 times and just missed 2 more home runs. One went to the track and one went off the wall. So he could have very easily had 5 of them. And he wasn't even using the bat. So, but where people, Cortes didn't pitch well. The Yankees were on. By the way, it was unseasonably warm in the Bronx, 78 to 82 degrees in early April. And then on top of that, you had a 15-mile-an-hour wind blowing out on a porch where, you know, in left and right, it's easy to hit it out. So come on now, guys. Let's not overreact to a very, very small sample size. If this was something that was going to dramatically help everybody, why are only 13 players using it?
Agreed. And that pretty much wraps up the truth and nothing but the truth. Now we get to go to the part of the show we have the most fun with, for sure.
Absolutely.
And that's the top 5 all time of something. And this week, BK, is the top 5 soundtrack songs of all time. I had a lot of fun with this one.
I feel judged already.
I'm going to be honest with you, BK. When I saw the topic, I didn't even look at what you had. My mind was already off and racing. I didn't want to know what you had.
Well, I just hope somewhere out there listening or watching is interested in what I have. Otherwise, that won't go great.
That's not what I meant, BK.
For this week. But with that being said, what do you got at number five?
Number five for me, Isaac Hayes. The Shaft theme song, baby. You know, they say that man Shaft's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. But I'm talking about Shaft. We can dig it. Yes, sir. The Shaft theme song.
I love it. So for me, it's going to be a little Eye of the Tiger.
Okay. Okay. That didn't make my list, but it's definitely now an honorable mention because it should have been. I like it. I like it.
Who you got at number four?
Number four for me, one of my favorite karaoke songs, Bryan Adams. Everything I Do, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Classic song, man.
That was on my honorable mention. It just
okay.
Did.
Okay.
I actually, believe it or not, I actually had that at number six. I do. That's a great song. Great track and great, yeah. For me, now I number four, Endless Love.
Oh, Lionel Richie and Diana Ross? Yeah. It wasn't that the name of the movie too?
Well, so where I'm thinking about it specifically was when I saw it in Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, so it was actually originally in another movie, if I'm not mistaken.
It was. It's had a few.
Yeah, definitely a classic. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like it. Number three. This one, I'm actually making an executive decision to switch my two and three. My number three, Boys to Men, End of the Road, Boomerang soundtrack.
Love it.
What you got?
I love it. My number three is a little Titanic soundtrack here. My heart will go.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That whole soundtrack was phenomenal.
Love it.
And the album that Celine Dion put out, if I'm not mistaken, it had that song on it. That whole album was legit. Like, one of my favorites all time. Like, that whole album was a playthrough album. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, number two, almost at number one. What you got?
My number two is actually, I'm going to make another executive decision. My number two is actually going to be my number one. So that makes my number two now, from Despicable Me, Part Two, Happy by Pharrell. You can't listen to, you're a despicable person if you can listen to that song and not get some pep in your step, not be at least 1% happier than you were before it started playing. Like, it's a you problem if you don't like that song. That's all I'm saying. Like, come on now. That's just a, it's a classic, but it's also like it reaches through so many. Look, BK, I'm going to give you a little bit of insight into something real quick that you might not have known if I didn't tell you.
All right, I'm all for being smarter.
We were singing Happy in black church. Like, that's how far reaching this song went.
Wow.
Sing along if you feel like a, yeah, come on, man. That's, it's yeah. Yeah, which is why it was originally my number one, but I couldn't in good conscience move. As much as I like my three and two now, I couldn't in good conscience not give number one to number one. So,
well, my number two is I've Had the Time of My Life. Can't have a top number.
Okay. I like it. Number one for me, first of all, not only is this the number one song, but for my money, it's the number one soundtrack of all time.
Mm.
Whitney Houston, Bodyguard, I'll Always Love You. The song, the soundtrack, the movie, it's few and far between that you have an actress, a singer, who's able to give you everything that you can ask for in a movie and give you everything that you can ask for in an album at the same time. That hasn't happened very often. Maybe a Michael Jackson Moonwalker? Prince Purple Rain? Mm. I can't really think of any other situations where the soundtrack, the singer, and the actor or actress just made everything work. And she did that. Now I am going to give an honorable mention to another Whitney Houston soundtrack, and that's the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack, which is actually another one of my favorite movie soundtracks of all time. And a really good movie too. So that's where I'm at.
Well, I'm glad you finally came around to my side and you copied my number one. So thank you. My number one is also, it took you a while, a few executive decisions and cut through some red tape, but we got there. Congratulations. We both have the same number one. I Will Always Love You. But here's what I will say. Here's what I'll say about this. So I've always thought Mariah Carey had the most amazing voice. And then you listen to Whitney Houston sing, and I've never heard in my lifetime someone who can sing like Whitney Houston. She is in a league of her own.
Agreed.
She was that special. So yeah, clearly number one, I Will Always Love You. And there were no executive decisions needed here.
I'm happy with the fact that I'm willing to make corrections when it needs to be corrected. That's why not having an ego.
Zayd, last week I had to make an executive decision where I completely swapped out my number two with something that wasn't even on the list. So, you know.
I'm honest about my executive decisions.
I love it.
When you're right, you're right. And when you're wrong, you're wrong. I had to make some needed changes, BK, and there's nothing wrong.
Gotcha. End of the day, you got it right.
And that's all that matters. It's kind of like how we feel about referees and replay. At the end of the day, just get it right.
You have one job. Get it right.
BK's best bets, and I'm glad you have that current sentiment, sir. Just get it right, BK. What we got?
Well, speaking of that, you know what will make me happy? Is it the best bets keep winning? Because telling you who the final four was in both sides, 100% 4-for-4, 8-for-8 total in both of them. So now I can tell you the picks. In the women's side.
Oh, BK, I'm sorry. Real quick.
Yeah.
Am I tripping? Or the women's basketball, I didn't see their bets.
They're on here.
For college? I didn't see them.
Yeah, I did a WBB and I gave a spread, and then MBB, which is the men's.
No. I mean, for the site that you use regularly, I saw the men's tournament, and we use a site called Bet Online. So, but I didn't see any of the women's stuff. So I just wanted to make sure.
I see, mea culpa. No, so I actually took it from DraftKings.
Got you. Okay.
Because while in South Carolina, we can't bet on DraftKings, I'm still able to see all the lines on DraftKings. So I was able to, that's how I was able to get them.
Got you. Okay. Makes sense.
But so women's basketball, obviously you guys know that I have UConn advancing to the national title game. South Carolina, Texas, round 4. we talked a little bit earlier in the show about how it's been a bookends, right? In the first and third matchup, the Lady Gamecocks wore them out. They shut down the Longhorns on defense and won both games easily going away. Neither game was a contest. Obviously, the game in Austin, Texas was able to shut them down the last 4 minutes and held on for a 4-point win, 66-62, ending the Lady Gamecocks' 55-game SEC win streak. I think what we're going to see on this weekend is the same thing that we saw in the bookends. Give me the Lady Gamecocks to go to another national title game. I like them -4 to beat Texas. They won by, I think, 15 each of the two times they won. I'm not sure how this spread's only 4. In a couple places, I saw it at 4.5. So 4.5 is what you can get it at. South Carolina, again, I said this about Maryland, and Maryland really, really had them on the ropes, so give them credit. Mm-hmm. Although I did tell you guys to take Maryland +17.5. I just think that South Carolina is too good, and this isn't a good matchup for Texas. South Carolina will win. They're going to go to the national title game, and they'll be one game away from going back-to-back. Lady Gamecocks, -4. The other two best bets are the semifinals. Florida versus Auburn. Auburn and Florida are both terrific teams. They're deserving of making the Final Four. I mentioned earlier that Florida was able to beat them earlier in the year, 90-81, where they got off to a 21-point lead and held on by 9. The difference between Florida and Auburn, to me, is really encompassed by one thing. Auburn is very steady. They play really good defense. They have players that can knock down threes. They're very well coached by Bruce Pearl. Yeah. The difference to me is Florida is one of the three remaining teams left in this field that have something called spurtability, where all of a sudden their offense just gets cranked up and you're even, and all of a sudden there's like a 17-2 run. And you have no idea what hit you. And all of a sudden, this tight match turned into like, all of a sudden, you're in a world of hurt. Auburn doesn't really, I know they put a run on Michigan State. And I believe Michigan State as well. Both teams, they put runs on in the second half. So they're capable of it. But Florida, Houston, and Duke all can have devastating runs. And there's a difference to this. Give me the Gators -2. They're going to go to the national title game. In the other one, we have Duke versus Houston. The spread is 5. I'm just going to take the money line here. If you go back in recent history, teams giving 5 or more are 8-5 against the spread, which is a pretty good number, not a great number, but a pretty good number. I just like Duke to win the game. Houston plays terrific defense, but Duke has the best player in Cooper Flagg. I think the X factor in this game, though, is 2 things. Pace of play. Houston wants to play in the 50s. Duke wants to play above 75. Who controls the tempo? The second thing is, who's the X factor on Duke that's going to get him through? I like a guy like Proctor to be a guy who is the unsung hero for Duke. I like Duke to beat Houston. It's going to be Duke and the Gators for the national title game. And that is this week's Best Bets.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
One quick thing, though, by the way, Zay, because I don't want to take a pass. I do want to at least give my predictions through the brackets, because earlier I couldn't really do that. So real quick, I wanted to say I have Duke and Florida advancing the national title game, and I had Duke winning the national title game. Yes, I'm sorry, fellow Tar Heels. I'm sorry, but it's not my job to pick who I like. It's my job to give you who's going to win. Duke is going to get it done. They have the best player on the best team. As far as the women's, I know I'm probably not going to be able to travel too much in the state coming in the near future, but I do think the Huskies are a team on the mission. The Lady Gamecocks are terrific. They do have that revenge factor, and they have the depth, and Dawn Staley's a terrific coach. You've heard me laud her as a person and as a leader many times on this program. I always say she's an A++++ coach, an even better person, if you can believe that. That's how great she is. I just like Gino and Beckers. They're going to get it done. I like UConn and Duke to cut down the nets in the tournament.
I don't mind you being wrong. That's okay. So, I'm clearly picking with my heart, and I'm okay with that. But no, it feels as if this is a South Carolina team that is on the precipice of greatness, and they're missing one person from the transfer portal, and she's coming. I don't know who she is yet, but she's coming. Everyone else knows what we saw. Trust me when I tell you, there'll be somebody transferring in to play center or power forward from another squad that wants to win the championship.
Dawn is a master of adjustments. You saw it during the season after the UConn loss. They've been a team on a tear coming into the tournament. You know, obviously there's been some tough close games in the tournament, but Coach Daly can recruit. She has a proven track record. She's absolutely the definition of greatness. And I can assure you she's aware of that and will make sure that's not a problem next year. You can bet on that too.
Look, I'm just looking forward to a weekend of excellence. Like, this is going to be a great sports weekend. So looking forward to it and looking forward to talking about it on next weekend. But for this week, we have one more thing to do. Can't miss weekly rants. For me, this one is going to be short, sweet, and simple. I wish, this is my sports fan pipe dream, if you will. I wish that sports, by and large, was just a little bit more complimentary of each other. And what I mean by that is, there's no reason why it can't be someone's job to coordinate things as such that the big guys don't devour the little guys. If you, for instance, there's no reason that the South Carolina girls should be playing the same time that the NFL Sunday games are starting. Why? There are too many days in the week. There are too many times on that day. Why are we compete? Like, just set the thing up so that everyone has their own space and their own channel, so people don't have to pick and choose. There's 1,000 different TV channels. Like, we don't have to compete there. There are plenty of different time slots. We don't have to compete there. Let's just be a little bit more coordinated so that everyone can get their flowers and everyone can get the eyeballs on them that they deserve to have. You see that a lot with the NFL and NBA as well, until the NFL ends and now pretty much all you have on Sunday is basketball. But there's no reason why they can't be coordinated better so that you don't have to pick and choose. And maybe that's a pipe dream or just a sports fan's wish, if you will. But I think that that matters, because everyone who wants to watch is also a sports fan. So do better. What you got for us this week, BK?
So I would like to officially petition the program director at ESPN, because I have a bone to pick. And I know that some of you are going to say that I'm going to be very biased about this. And you know what? You're right. And you'll deal with it. Here's the deal. I'm tired of watching cornhole on national TV on ESPN. I don't need to watch gymnastics on ESPN. Like, the 25 people that watch those two things aren't interested. Please stop. You know what should be on TV more? Pickleball. And it has already outgrown in 5 years tennis and golf's popularity combined in the last 5 years. And remember, just for those who need a little history repeats itself lesson, do you remember ESPN televised a certain thing called the World Series of Poker? Do you remember how poker's been going on for 10 decades now?
Yeah.
Years, and no one paid attention to it until 25 years ago when they played it on ESPN. And now everybody plays poker, and there's all these online websites and all these things.
That's true.
Time to give, as you say, Zay, it's time to give pickleball its flowers. There are stars, Ben Johns, Anna Lee Waters. Put them on TV. Let people see how fun this game is, how the competitiveness, the athleticism it takes, the stamina, the concentration, the mental toughness, the focus, how hard they work at this. Let's put that on TV. No one wants to watch cornhole where people can drink beer and do these things. Okay? Not that I'm saying anything bad about doing that, by the way, for all the people out there. But all I'm saying is, let's upgrade our programming. We can do better. We clearly can't do worse. So it's time to fix this. No more gymnastics. No more cornhole. There's plenty of other things we can also take off as well. Pickleball needs to be in the rotation. You're welcome.
Let me help you out, BK. Let me clean that up real quick before we start getting hate mail. There's plenty of time slots for gymnastics. And, well, we'll just stick with gymnastics. No one cares about that. But so how about we don't need to see SportsCenter 25 times a day? Like, there's room without having to take anything away. And we don't need a 24-hour news cycle on sports. There isn't that much happening. That's what's... Okay, BK, I haven't done this before on the show, but I was just inspired to do rant number two.
I love it.
That's one of the biggest issues right now. Humble opinion, people having to make up stuff to be fake outraged about because it's a 24-hour news cycle for sports. Like, for what? There isn't that much going on in sports where you need to constantly update people 24/7. Like, we're creating rivalries that aren't there. We're creating animosity that isn't actually there. A lot of stuff is being created that could be bypassed if you just didn't need to fill a time slot. That's kind of what it's feeling like now. So if you're upset about something, be upset. If you like something, like it. If you don't, don't. But to create these fake debates about something that you actually agree about, to make something that is a none problem seem as if it's much larger than what it is. I know you're putting butts in the seats and anything to make a dollar make sense to corporate America, but we've watered down tremendously sports journalism and sports reporting just because there isn't that much to talk about. So you have to fill it with so much fluff. So with that being said, that actually wraps up the show for this week. And we will be back to you on next Wednesday with the fantasy football show. We will be going over the quarterbacks to look at in this year's draft, who we like, who we don't like, who we think will end up where, all that kind of good stuff. That'll be followed by our show, the flagship show, the Gospel Sports Truth Podcast, again on next Friday. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel at the Gospel STP. Join the Facebook group if you have not, the Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. And guys, remember, as always, tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. Later, y'all. Yeah.